Good morning. Hope everybody's well caffeinated. I'm going to call to order the Tuesday, February 25th, 2025 House of Representatives State Government Finance and Policy Committee. We'll start off with a little housekeeping. Representative Sexton, have you had a moment to review the minutes?
I have. I move to approve.
Mr. Okay. Chair?
Representative Davis.
We have a correction that we need to make in our minutes, and I know Chair Quam would like to spell this as Freitag, but Representative Mike Freiberg is spelled F-R-E-I-B-E-R-G.
All right. Well, thank you for your diligence. I'm sure Representative Freiberg will appreciate that when we let him know. We'll make that correction, and we will then move to approve the minutes as amended. So Representative Sexton moves the minutes as amended. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Nobody opposed to the minutes? Come on, let's start off. Okay. Tell you what we're going to do. We are going, at the discretion of the chair, I didn't actually say that it passed, so we will bring these minutes to the Thursday session, and we will move minutes from both today and then, and we want to make sure that you're included. So, all right. So with that, we have a number of presentations today. And for our new members, these are a great way to learn a little bit about the departments and agencies that we have here at the Capitol. I know both Lee Cleaborn and I appreciate these things. We learn stuff that prevents questions that you can learn in these things from being asked later on. So today, we have the Department of Administration, the Department of Revenue, and Minnesota IT. And we are going to start off with the Department of Administration. So we have three folks all bright-eyed in there. They're smiling now. There we go. If you would, introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your presentation.
Good morning, Chair Nash, Lead Cleaborn, and committee members. I'm Tamar Grunval, the Commissioner of the Department of Administration. It's good to be with all of you today. And with me, I have Deputy Commissioner Stacy Christensen and Assistant Commissioner Wayne Wazlowski. Together, we will do three things. First, we'll walk through our recent work to help agencies right-size their workspaces. Next, we'll provide a very high-level overview of the services that admin provides to the enterprise and Minnesota communities, as well as investments that this committee made in 2023. And finally, we'll share the governor's budget recommendations for admin for the coming biennium. We'll then stand ready for your questions. I'll now turn it over to Assistant Commissioner Wazlowski.
Thank you, Commissioner. Mr. Chair, members, for the record, my name is Wayne Wazlowski, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Administration. I'll start with some background on our strategic facilities plan. 16B24 tasks admin with helping agencies determine space based on their business needs. Hired CBRE, a global commercial real estate company, in October 2021 to assist with development of a strategic facilities plan. That focus of the plan was examining office space needs in a hybrid work environment. The plan refined space standards, developed strategies and best practices for hybrid work environments. That plan was finalized and distributed to agencies in 2023. Core questions the plan answers, starting with the most important question, which is how do we best serve Minnesotans? That starts with the mission and how best to deliver services. Importantly, space planning follows agency assessment of services and functions. The space follows the business need. Based on the nature of work, many functions across the enterprise are full-time on-site. Second question, what type of space is needed to work effectively? Workspace to match the work employee is doing that day in the office. It's about prioritizing collaboration space, working and meeting together. The last question, how do we plan for variable and shared occupancy? And it's no longer that one-to-one ratio workspace to FTE. And this is important on how we drive to savings. With the plan. Key office space recommendations is 175 to 200 usable square feet per person as an average. We moved away from assigned workstations to shared workstations, 1.3:1 to 1.4:1 staff to seat ratio instead of that 1:1 ratio. 3 days in a week may have an assigned space, otherwise on a shared hoteling type space for the team members. Provide a variety of space types, huddle, collaboration, focus to accommodate varying work activities in office location. A couple of bullet points on the overall portfolio approach. First of all, prioritizing backfilling state-owned facilities on Capitol Complex to fully utilize state assets, along with selective demolition of buildings with systems beyond the end of their useful life. Admin led this effort with ourselves. We started with admin and our space consolidation, and it's important that there's thoughtful consideration once you move away from having a dedicated workspace to having unassigned workspaces. So we worked across our team to develop some norms, and then we tested those norms and then communicated those out to agencies to use. A little bit on the timeline. So the plan was distributed to agencies in May of 2023. In July of 2023, admin distributed a toolkit to agencies to manage this transition in space use. And then since then, we've been working on implementation of the plan and prioritizing agencies based on lease expiration dates. This is a listing for our, you know, what's been accomplished to date. And so on the left column, you see the major space reductions to date since 2020. A couple of those were done before the plan was in place, and the rest were after the plan was in place. Center column, we have some major space reductions that are in process. They're either in the RFP stage where we're evaluating space that's available in the market, or they're doing fit planning work to right-size their agencies. And then the last column is some, we have some major upcoming lease expirations, so some additional opportunities for space consolidation. Lastly, there's a couple additional elements of the plan that are important to note, starting with the plan relocation of tenants from the Centennial Office Building. One of the recommendations is the plan, and one of the things that was evaluated is with Centennial Office Building, the building systems are at the end of their useful life and beyond the end of their useful life. And the question is that building worth a major reinvestment of funds to renovate and bring those systems up to current systems or not? And the conclusion in the plan and the evaluation was a recommendation to demolish the Centennial Office Building. You'll see this as a key part, a key question for consideration by the legislature, because that really drives then the backfilling of space on the Capitol Complex. If we're emptying out Centennial Office Building, relocating the rest of the existing tenants there to other buildings on the campus. And then another point that element that was evaluated as part of the plan is our locations in greater Minnesota, particularly are there opportunities for hub locations. One of the significant things that agencies have reported with the transition to hybrid work is the increase in being able to hire employees that live in greater Minnesota. And so this really evaluated and made a recommendation for potentially creating regional hubs so that you have office space locations closer to where people are living and working, and those could be in co-located facilities that are shared across a number of agencies. And again, first looking at our state-owned assets, whether that's our Department of Transportation or Department of Natural Resources, our state-owned facilities for opportunities to co-locate within those facilities. And with that, I'll turn it to the commissioner.
If you would, I'm going to allow Lead Cleborn to ask a question that seems timely to your comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question is, have we considered also looking at space that might be available in our higher education institutions as well for co-locating some of those Greater Minnesota positions? We have space that may be available there. Has that been looked at all?
Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cleborn, that is part of an ongoing. We do that on a regular basis with Minnesota State, and they actually, as part of their office space planning, looked at our strategic plan as well. So we're in regular communications with them. We haven't advanced the regional hub concept. That's something that's to be implemented. It was just a recommendation in the plan. We've been prioritizing, again, based on lease expiration dates, the other work that we've been doing.
Lee Cleaver?
Yeah, I would just say thank you. You know, when we talk about state assets, I'd like to look at the big picture, and so I appreciate your consideration of that as well. Thank you.
Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you all for being here today. So this is, I'm a first-termer, so I have some maybe newbie questions. So you'd mentioned, I think the process makes a lot of sense of how you've been evaluating these things. And so I was just curious, there are four agencies that have upcoming lease expirations, and but you'd also said that there's a recommendation to demolish Centennial. So I guess had there been any consideration to just, you know, end those leases and have folks then move over to Centennial? Can you talk me through that?
Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, the part of the strategic plan, so I think it starts with the condition of the Centennial office building. The building system have aged out. And so they're beyond the end of their useful life. So our HVAC, our mechanical, our the windows, the roof system, it's one of the poorest rated buildings on the campus. So it is in need of major reinvestment to replace those systems. And what this plan studied was the cost of doing that versus our other alternatives, continuing to locate in lease facilities. We also have opportunities, as I mentioned, to consolidate space in transportation building with MnDOT's current fit planning work. We have opportunities in the Anderson building on the campus that DHS occupies. They're just finishing up their fit plan. That's going to demonstrate there's a lot of potential space savings there, as well as we still have some space to backfill in Stassen. So we do think there's opportunities to backfill spaces on the campus. We just, it's a question for the legislature on, is Centennial office with, and those that are on the bonding committee know the competition for capital investment dollars and our overall asset preservation needs across the state, and is really the Centennial office building a building that is worth that type of investment when you're competing with some of these other priorities? And the recommendation that we're coming forward with is it's not, that building is should be demolished.
Well, it's exciting for us that you speak so lovingly of where we office. It makes us feel good.
Mr. Chair, I understand that.
So it's great. Next, you'll tell us that we're breathing asbestos or something good like that. So, Representative Jones.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Deputy Commissioner, for that explanation. Maybe there are no plans for this yet, but I guess what is the, I guess, if that moves forward, so I guess what is the process? So the legislature would need to approve the demolition. Is that the first step?
Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, members, our intention is to submit a capital budget request in this this upcoming session through the process, MMB's capital budget process. So we would have that as one of our requests for the agency, and then that would be a consideration for the legislature and the governor for funding next session.
And then before we move on, I think, are you done, Representative Jones? Yeah, I think before we move on, maybe as you do that, because March may not bring us the greatest news from a budget forecast perspective, if you could maybe, for the benefit of the committee, provide what does leaving that building sitting empty or utilized cost versus the demolition? So if it's a liability, what does it cost to keep it, running lights off or whatever? Because we're going to have to make tough decisions. And if knocking it down costs more than we have at the moment, it's going to have to stay standing, I would imagine. So let's get back to your presentation and move on to either Representative Davis.
You had brought up the DOT building. How many in-office seats are open in the MnDOT building?
Deputy Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't know that number. I would just say that's part of what gets evaluated when they're doing this. Right now, they're in the space planning process, so that is what they're evaluating. And back to the Commissioner's opening thing, this is about right-sizing the space based on that utilization. So that's what gets evaluated, and that's what they're just finishing up now.
And members, let's let the presenters get through their full presentation, and then once we get to the end, we'll keep our questions brief. So, Deputy Commissioner, back to you or whoever is next. Please proceed.
Chair and committee, thank you. Today I'll be giving a high-level overview of our 27 divisions and the wide variety of services we provide. Our vision at ADMIN is to deliver excellent services every time. And our mission is to provide leadership, innovation, solutions, and support to help our partners succeed. In other words, as a central service agency, our primary role is to help government best serve Minnesotans throughout all of our Minnesota communities. We do that through cost-effective and transparent services that make government more accessible and responsive to the public. We also serve the legislature, local municipalities, and nonprofit organizations. In addition, we provide some critical services directly to Minnesotans through at least three of our divisions and Minnesota businesses through several of our divisions. At a high level, to better understand the breadth of our work and service, here are a few statistics about ADMIN. Our partners rely on us to provide the critical core services that help them operate effectively. These services include overseeing the state's annual purchasing of $3.7 billion in goods and services. We also manage 650 property leases and more than 320 annual construction projects. For example, last year in 2024, ADMIN finished the construction management of three new veterans' homes in Minnesota in the Montevideo, Preston, and Bemidji communities. Additionally, we are the enterprise's insurance agent, protecting $22.4 billion of insured state assets. ADMIN's total budget is a combination of legislatively appropriated general fund, enterprise and internal service funds, special revenue funds, and federal dollars. The general fund makes up about 26% of ADMIN's budget, but more than half of that is legislatively appropriated fiscal agent funds, such as in lieu of rent and grant funding to public television and radio stations. As you may know, ADMIN for our facilities work across the Capitol complex and beyond. For example, as you entered the building today, you may have seen our facilities maintenance crews who shovel the sidewalks and keep the Capitol and Centennial office buildings operating and clean. ADMIN manages, constructs, and leases property for state government. ADMIN also manages the state's fleet, equipment, and insurance, as I highlighted a minute ago. ADMIN also manages the state's public contracting and provides business support across all of our Minnesota communities. Through the SMART team, ADMIN also provides finance and HR services to many of the state's small agencies, boards, and councils. ADMIN also provides infrastructure and cultural resources services across the state to our Minnesota communities through the Office of the State Archaeologist and the State Historic Preservation Office, or SHPO, as some people know it. ADMIN's other divisions provide services more directly to all Minnesotans, as I mentioned earlier, throughout all of our communities. The work of these divisions is aimed directly at helping Minnesotans troubleshoot issues. Their services include providing a significant amount of government information and assisting Minnesotans to make government work better for them. So a few of those services are listed above: the Council on Developmental Disabilities for Adults, the STAR program, the Demographic Center, the Office of Grants Management, the Data Practices Office, the Enterprise Translations Office, and the Office for Collaboration and Dispute Resolution. Now I'll pass it on to Deputy Commissioner Stacy Christensen to walk through an update of the appropriations from 2023. After that, I'll provide an overview of the government's budget recommendations for ADMIN, and then we'll be available for questions.
Deputy Commissioner, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Morning, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, again, Stacey Christensen, Deputy Commissioner at the Department of Administration. Today, I'll share an update on the funds that admin received in fiscal years 24 and 25. Thank you to the legislature for the investments that you made in state government during the 2023-2024 biennium. These appropriations allowed admin to maintain our current levels of service to cover inflationary costs of salary and overhead, add additional capacity for our small divisions to meet the increased demands for their services, and address certain IT gaps, and update antiquated technology systems to protect the state's data and modernize their processes. Given that admin is a central service agency, these investments helped us hold down the costs that we charge to other agencies for our services. Additionally, the legislature invested in an expansion of the Office of Grants Management, which has enabled admin to enhance our compliance efforts, training, and technical assistance for agency grant makers across the state enterprise. It has also enabled admin to conduct a greater oversight of grant-making agencies. The other large investments the legislature made in 2023 was establishing the Enterprise Translations Office. This office maintains the economies of scale framework admin promotes by allowing the office to help agencies avoid costs for external vendor translations. Admin also received a few one-time appropriations that made valuable investments in admin's work. These included funds to increase the state's property self-insurance pool. Self-insuring a greater portion of assets lowers the need for private insurance and reduces operational costs for agencies. Finally, additional investments in asset preservation and studies on various issues will support and inform admin's work in the future. And I'll turn it back to Commissioner Grunwald for the governor's budget recommendations.
A chair and committee. First, the governor recommends an increase in admin's operating budget. We are requesting $301,000 in fiscal year 26 and $610,000 in fiscal 27 and ongoing. It covers growing expenses for healthcare, compensation, utilities, IT, and legal services. The governor also recommends an increase in lieu of rent. This appropriation funds the known costs of operations around the Capitol area for entities that do not pay for their leased space. These include public areas in the Capitol building, space for the House of Representatives and Senate in the Capitol, Veteran Services Organization space, and memorials on the Capitol grounds. Next, the governor recommends establishing the state building renewable energy storage and electric vehicle account. This is a zero cost request. This would enable admin to leverage federal funds for renewable energy and energy storage upgrades at state-owned facilities. Admin will apply for and accept federal cash rebates on behalf of the state for eligible renewable energy projects and EV fleet purchases. Dollars would then be used to help fund future renewable energy projects. Next, the governor recommends a budget savings measure and a technical correction. First, admin is proposing a small cut by eliminating an unassigned fiscal agent appropriation. So in 2023, funding for public TV block grants was designated as one-time in-session law. However, funding was provided in admin's fiscal agent appropriation on an ongoing basis of $500,000 per year. The funding is not assigned to a purpose, so we're proposing to cut that appropriation. Finally, admin has one budget neutral correction for the insulin repayment program. The change would properly identify the account into which transfers from the Healthcare Access Fund should be made for the insulin repayment program. As it's currently enacted, the fiscal year 25 appropriation directs the Commissioner of MMB to transfer $100,000 to the incorrect program account. The dollar should instead be transferred to the insulin repayment account in the Special Revenue Fund to properly pay any potential reimbursement of insulin manufacturers. That completes our presentation this morning. Thank you for the opportunity to see all of you and meet with you and talk about the great work that we do for all of Minnesotans across our entire communities. And I'm happy, and we stand ready to answer any questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. I'll start off with a quick question for you. The governor's budget request, as we have said, March may not hold great news for us, and my question to you is, are you prepared internally? Have you sort of tabletopped this out as what happens if the budget that comes back from the legislature is considerably less than requested? And have you figured out ways to prioritize the needs that you have and how you will spend the money that you may or may not get from the legislature?
Chair Nash, we are always tracking and planning and monitoring. And I'll say that admin is a very lean organization, and we are constantly seeking internal efficiencies and ways to live within the budget that we have.
I'll take that as a yes.
Yes.
Representative Joy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Another question for you guys is, of course, the question that's going to come out of State Office Building, the new renovation of the State Office Building. How is that coming into the mix of things? And the second question that is, what other spaces will be in that new footprint? What's that going to look like?
Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative. I will turn it to Assistant Commissioner Wasilowski to answer that question.
Assistant Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, members, so the State Office Building project, we already have existing funding, so it doesn't impact the for the completion of the project. The tenants that will be housed there will be essentially the same tenants that were there previously. I think there's a question on maybe one or two of the organizations on whether they're in or out. I think primarily what the State Office Building project entails is it's 10 new legislative hearing rooms, and that is a significant part of the project is creating those hearing rooms that with obviously with the broadcast capabilities, as well as the overall addressing the security needs that we have in these type of public facilities.
Representative Joy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The other question is too, and we, I think you said that there's money invested into it to cover that expense of the State Office Building. Is there any uncertainty that it could be overruns or what it's going to cost? Is there any overruns right now, or how are we looking on that? Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, no, we part of the budget included contingency funds along with any project. Those that have been involved in managing projects know that you're going to have unknown situations that come up, and so we had contingency funds set aside to manage those uncertainties and the events that come up, and we're still tracking within the existing budget that we have.
Thank you, Representative Joy. And before we move to Representative Anderson, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask, in the new SOB or SOB.2 or whatever we want to call it, I don't believe, and I think we talked about this in my office, there is not room for the Legislative Budget Office. Where are we going to stash them? What's the plan for that, and maybe why not in the in the State Office Building Part 2?
Mr. Chair, that is correct. That group was not identified as being located within the State Office Building. That really is a tenant-driven decision. I would say our planning for that, we haven't had direct conversations with the Legislative Budget Office. We're waiting for the planning to finish with the Department of Transportation and the Transportation Building, but that is a potential location based on MnDOT space consolidation. I will say that there's also, again, this goes back to the demolition of the COB. We have agencies like MMB and the legislative auditor that obviously need to be close to legislative activities, so we'd also be looking to consolidate them into the transportation building. But those were in the early stages. Really, that starts with MnDOT saying, okay, here's how much space we can make available, and then we look to the groups most need to be in proximity to the legislative functions and then prioritize based on that. But we think there would be enough space to accommodate those three entities within the transportation building.
Okay. We certainly don't want them to be diasporic. So Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also serve on the Ag Committee, and we had an overview similar to yours yesterday in Ag, and the department went over their budget, And one of the things that was brought up was that I believe in 2020, there was about a $20 million bonding project to revamp the HVAC system at the lab, Department of Health and Department of Ag. And that was amortized, I believe, over a 20-year period. But in the budget looking ahead, that cost was going to be increased because they said the interest rates are higher. Well, aren't those rates locked in for a 20-year period? And why would the interest rate be increased and the annual cost increase to the Department of Ag for that project?
Who would like to take this one?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I can start if okay. And I think we may have to get back to you on that level of detail. But generally, MMB sells bonds based on, not by project, but based on cash flow needs. So they'll they work with all entities that receive bond appropriations to project out when are you going to actually spend the dollars, and MMB sizes their bond sales based on that. And so the bonds sold at that 2021 session could have been, or the project, those funds that were sold could have been sold later than 2023, for example. But I think we'll have to follow up to get you specifics on exactly. We'd have to go back to MMB to coordinate on when were the bonds actually sold for this particular project.
Thank Representative you. Anderson, anything further? Okay. Back to Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so thank you for this presentation. The slide particularly around infrastructure and especially the archaeology, actually, and the conversation about the Centennial Office Building made me think. A couple months ago, went down a rabbit hole, I think, of a page of one of yours around the archaeology of the Capitol complex, and I found it really interesting kind of learning about the history of the space and that it actually used to be more of a neighborhood. There used to be more homes and businesses around here. And so, especially with the Centennial Office Building, you know, I'm wondering if that the request you might be making for demolition, would there be any potential for selling off that parcel for other uses by private entities?
Assistant Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I would say we expect, obviously, this to be the seat of state government for the next hundreds of years, hopefully, and so we would view that as the Centennial Office Building as a very valuable piece of real estate, and the state's, we're obviously in a period of shrinking, particularly related to our office space needs, but there's going to be other needs that come up, and we, given the Capitol Mall, and this is the seat of state government, we would not view selling that off as we would not be recommending that the sale of that site. We would be looking for an interim, some type of landscaping plan for an interim use, essentially a green space for that site.
So we're not letting St. Peter back in the game for the Capitol?
Mr. Chair, that would not be our recommendation.
Okay, because been there. I like St. Paul better. Representative Jones, back to you. Or are you done?
I'm good. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Sexton.
Good morning, Chair. Quick question. On the timeline slide, I'm used to seeing a timeline where we actually have a goal with an end date. This seems very open-ended. Do we have some goals that we're trying to achieve as far as reductions by a certain date to get people to move along with their plans and things? Or, again, this seems very open-ended.
Mr. Chair, Representative, certainly a fair question. Again, we're prioritizing based on lease expiration dates, and so where we have leases in the private market, we're timing our space consolidation work based on those expiration dates. And so we do have some dates that go out to 2027, 2028. So you will see this, and I think as we were talking about this from the beginning, this was going to be a 4 to 5 year process. And I also just say I think that's consistent with, again, we worked with CBRE to make sure we were following best practices, and I think consistent with both what's happening in the private and public sector as far as people right-sizing their spaces. It does take time to do that.
Representative Sexton.
I think just overall I would add, I think to date we've achieved over 300,000 square feet of space reductions, and we still see there's significant additional opportunity.
Representative Sexton, anything further? Before we jump into the last round of questions, if anybody has some, so let's say that the Centennial Office Building is knocked down. The parking structure that is adjacent to it, I mean, if you want to see something crazy, watch people scurry around, because I look out of it, out my window, fighting for parking spaces. Is that scheduled also to be knocked down? And are we going to hang on to that? Or you know, and the, in the demolition process, what happens to that parking structure? Is it closed down if it's knocked down? So if you would.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, no, we see that. First of all, the legislature, we invested significant funds in work at that facility, and we continue to actively monitor that, assess the condition of that facility and do annual maintenance to make sure that facility is available for many, many years to come. We would note anytime there's activity events on the mall, you know, obviously with the legislative sessions, but other events on the mall, that facility gets heavily utilized. So we that facility would remain in place. We would probably add some trees or something to screen it from the mall. We would
hiding the beauty of that parking structure.
Yeah, we probably would be looking to add some landscaping to help with that.
Before we get to Representative Quam, I had asked a question a couple weeks ago about the amount of money charged for parking spaces and then the amount of money reinvested into those parking structures. I don't remember getting an answer to that. And perhaps if you wanted to go back to your office and forward that over to me, because just speaking for me, I've seen the occasional chunk of things, and that I don't believe that's a term of art, but I do see things that give me pause and just wondered, as we charge folks like ourselves and the public for parking at these places, what amount of that is reinvested, and the amount that is not reinvested, where does that go and what does it do? So if you know that now, great. If not, maybe we can just get that sent back to myself, the ranking member, and the committee, just so that we have that available as we make decisions moving forward. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was sort of shocked when somebody asked about the occupancy percentage and you didn't know it, because over 8 years ago in higher ed and state gov finance, et cetera, there were questions about the occupancy. And you brought up Minnesota State when we're looking at regional. And I know over 8 years ago, Minnesota State and the University of Minnesota locations, plus there are major county and city things in the regions around the state where you could have a joint location instead of underutilizing facilities that we've been spending tens of millions of dollars to continually keep up and allow for occupancy. And it's just disappointing that you didn't have on hand, since this is not a topic that just popped into our minds today. But I would like to understand your investigations into regional grouping of, you know, state personnel, county, city, and, you know, U of M or Minnesota State. What so far have you worked out on that, you know, since you've had 8 years to work on it?
Assistant Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm not familiar with the reference to the 8 years. It seemed to be referencing something, some joint work that Minnesota State and the U of M worked on. I personally wasn't involved in that work. I would just say we're in constant communication with Minnesota State on when around our real estate needs, as well as with the U of M. As far as space utilization, as I indicated, space utilization gets looked at and evaluated as part of the space planning process, and that's about right-sizing the space based on the current needs. So that does get looked at on an agency-by-agency basis. It's not something that admin is tracking, obviously, our overall portfolio, but we're not tracking individual agencies on the use of the space. We do. That is the key fundamental question, though, what that comes up as part of the space planning process, under the strategic plan.
And perhaps, Representative Quam, in the interest of two more agencies presenting, could you work with admin to...
Well, I've got one more statement, Mr. Chair.
Representative
because
Quam.
I am tired of year after year asking the same questions. We don't have the data. You don't seem to have the data. You're in charge of managing these properties. You know, that's your job, has been for many years. But you are saying you don't really know what's going on. And these are questions, again, that have been asked many, many times across over a decade. So please actually give the committee the information in a timely fashion, because competent personnel would already have that available. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Lead Cleavorn had a quick corollary to this, and then we'll let you conclude.
Yeah. For the people who are not in the room who might be listening to this conversation, there is a strategic facilities plan from, and I don't know how often you update it, but this is from November 2022. And on page 67, it talks about the one location capital complex, which gives a lot of data for this information that I believe that Chair Quam is asking about. And I realize it would need to be updated again because it's from 2022, but this is the most recent plan that's available. Is that correct?
Whomever would like to answer that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cleavorn, that's correct.
Okay. So I will just ask this on behalf of the committee and Representative Quam, if you would make time on his calendar to make sure that we've clarified the questions that he would like to have answered. I'm sure all of us would like to know where we are and to be able to answer his questions. I guess one of the last questions that I have is, so if we're looking at locating perhaps regionally, maybe with one of the schools, are there funding requirements that might be in conflict with one another as to, like, can you not locate in some place because of the funding source of that, or because it's a land-grant university, can you not have certain types of things co-located? Are there any regulations that go along with that that would preclude locating, say, at the University of Minnesota in one of its satellite campuses or any other schools? To whomever would answer that.
Chair Nash, thank you. That is a good question. My first thought is that it would depend on which agency wants to co-locate and the hosting co-location, the hosting agency or building or institution, and what are the financial requirements for both of those or all three of those. Can they be co-located? So that'll depend on the regulations that guide those agencies that want to co-locate together. But I think it's an excellent question. We can follow up on it. And if I may briefly, Chair, to Representative Quam's question, certainly appreciate the information. Admin has jurisdiction over the state-owned buildings that are connected to state government and not state assets that are related necessarily to the higher ed institution. So we can still get that information, but just want to make sure there's folks understand that distinction.
Well, thank you very much for your presentation. I'm sure we'll be seeing you here in committee again as we talk budgets and so on, but I've always found you to be very available to us, so I would encourage members to reach out if you have questions, and we'll go from there. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, committee.
Next on our agenda, we have the Department of Revenue, a familiar face for many when he was... and we'll call it the good old days when he was Representative Marquardt. Commissioner, welcome to the committee. If you would introduce yourself and your team for the record and begin.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I am Paul Marquardt, the Commissioner of the Department of Revenue, and joined today by Lee Hole, the Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Revenue, and Devin Armstrong, who is a legislative coordinator. And so it's a pleasure today to be able to present this overview and then the budget request from the governor for the department. So we'll just begin here. If we can just have a second to get up and running with the slideshow.
Perhaps you can use a flannelgram or hand puppets to get where we needed to be.
Oh, I
thought that would be funnier. It's a thing. Representative Cleavorn will fill you in later. Thank you very much. So as we're waiting for that, members, we're going to try to get through this today. I certainly want to make time for your questions. If we don't, we can either have Minute come back at another time, or we'll just ask less questions, or flip a coin to see who gets to ask questions. So are we ready?
Yes. Commissioner, go ahead. Mr. Chair, I think we're ready to go.
Very good.
Certainly the mission of the Department of Revenue is working together to fund the future for all of Minnesota. And that's why what we do at the Department of Revenue, when we look at collecting revenue and managing that, it pays for all the important functions that the state performs each and every day for our citizens. Here is just some areas, and you can look at this later, of just how the Department of Revenue interacts with taxpayers. And, you know, that first one processes more than 7.2 million tax returns and refunds. That's about 3.1 individual returns, about 2.2 million refunds, about 1.1 million homestead refunds, and about 277,000 corporation returns. Next one, please. The department also, I mean, we're dealing with billions and billions of dollars, does a lot to protect taxpayers' dollars. And just want to look at the first couple there, is that kind of on an average, and it goes up and down, the department has stopped about $30 million in fraudulent filed tax returns from going out the door. And a lot of those have to do with homestead credit state refunds, where someone is trying to take someone else's identity. It kind of creates a red flag, and then a fraud unit will take a look at those and then stop them before those dollars go out. So the department is actually looking at a lot of inconsistencies, if there's even the way someone might have filed in the past. They're just using kind of data analytics in part to create red flags. And then the second one is through audits and collections and criminal charges, about $487 million of past due taxes were collected last year. Next slide.
And Mr. Chair, if I'll just stop you very briefly,
yes,
to give you a
Mr.
little chuck on the shoulder. My second oldest daughter had somebody file her income tax return to get them on, get the money on their own, and your department, in conjunction with Congressman Emmer's staff, resolved that for her quickly. And I'm not sure if the certified bad person was ever caught, but I sure hope so. But wanted to just say, as a dad, thank you for making sure that happened, and I'm sure that you do that for countless other people as well.
Mr. Chair, thanks for sharing that.
Appreciate
that. The next one there is how much revenue is collected. There's a pie chart of the types of general fund revenue. Of course, income tax is the biggest, but it's about $33 billion a year is collected. And the department, the cost of the department is about $200 million a year. So kind of that second bullet there, the administrative cost of managing, collecting, enforcing is about 0.6%. And that's nothing new. In my 25 years down here in state government, the Department of Revenue has always been professionally and very efficiently run, whether or not it was an independent governor, a Republican governor, or a Democratic governor. So this is nothing new, but it is a very low administrative cost in doing all of those things. Next slide, please. Who do we serve? Again, 3.1 million individual income tax filers. As of yesterday, 666,000 individual filers had sent in their returns. That's about 21% of what we will expect. 349,000 refunds have gone out at this point. Typically, about 93-94% file electronically. Currently, that's at 99%. It might just have to do with people who file early for refunds and so forth. And usually direct deposits, about 75%. We're at like 94.8% direct deposit right now. So just as a tip, the most efficient, most secure, and best way to get a refund back is to file electronically and take the direct deposit. One other thing I want to mention there is that third bullet down, that 800 licensed property tax assessor. The property tax is the one tax where government sets the amount or the value upon which the rate applies. That really only happens with the property tax. So we've got to make sure those assessors who are getting to those values are well qualified, and that is a major, major function of the Department of Revenue, is working and actually certifying and qualifying and approving your county assessors. And we do a report every year where we really look at things. And that's a whole different report someday if you ever want to hear that one. So if we can move on, very important, improving customer experience through technology. We care very much about the customer experience, and also providing them with an easier way to interact with the department. That is always a major goal. So there's a number of things, as you can see there. We're moving to e-services. We're kind of phasing that in, where you can just on your cell phone be able to do a lot of things. We're moving that way. Chatbot. It's not generative AI, which means we don't let the computer make up the answer. That's too important with taxes. So it's kind of preconceived, but it does allow for some of the easier questions to be answered, and then leaving more efficient time for our staff to do the more complex one. Automatic translation tool in Spanish, Hmong, and Somali languages. And then what is really important is securing and protecting customers' data. When we have a voluntary compliance system, it is a key that our taxpayers know their information is secure and safe. That's a big integrity of the system. Next one, please. Efficiencies in managing costs. Contact center enhancements, a lot more technology. I kind of mentioned about simpler calls versus more complex, more efficient use. AI is used there also. And then I know your last discussion was on physical footprint, and there the department has reduced about 35% of its physical footprint, I guess, since 2020. Securing taxpayer information is a key, and again, that is real bedrock to our voluntary compliance is about 97%. And people say, voluntary compliance, don't we have to pay our taxes? Yes, you do, but we rely on you to do that, either through a preparer, yourself, or a vendor. And the key is people have to have faith in the system. And so that is always something huge for the department. And so if I send my tax return in, I don't want Chair Nash, no offense, to see that data also. So
I'm not
hurt. We have a lot of things here that we do for our employees that secure that data. And if someone is browsing, which is a term, means they're looking at information they shouldn't be looking, that is very serious offense and usually immediate dismissal. Next slide, please. There is, we have 1,400 employees. Those are basically the job functions. This is who we are. Those are lots of different opportunities there. Next slide, please. So I want to talk about our hybrid in our revenue operations. So if we move to the next slide. This is what hybrid is at the Department of Revenue. I've got a few slides that explains why it probably works better for the Department of Revenue than maybe others and kind of what we're doing with that. But this is something we talk about every single day, and we take this very, very seriously. When I first came to the department, as I kind of looked at the number that we're working, teleworking and remote, I was somewhat skeptical, to say the least. But I said, we're going to look at what is the production, how is this working, are we providing what we should for high, top-notch service to our taxpayers, and it has. And so anyway, we are looking at this every day, and probably that second bullet off to the right there, the business needs is really what determines where a person's work location is going to be. And so we're looking at production. We think that is more important than the location of someone's work, where they work. And so that's going to be a real key as we look at things. Next slide, please. Three main principles we talk about at almost every senior management, a team meeting that we have, and we meet with managers and division directors. We are always in some way, shape, or form talking about these three principles that guide our hybrid approach, and that's performance, which we'll look at later, accountability. None of the work duties, none of the responsibilities, none of those change in a telework type of situation. And then also the employee experience. What is the satisfaction there? We've seen it's improved recruitment and retention. And we also think that employees better represent the state of Minnesota. So why does hybrid work for revenue maybe better than maybe some? Is, first of all, a lot of what we do is measurable. You know, you kind of look at call centers, collections, audit, tax return processing. Those are all very much process-orientated. It's very measurable. Second, we have a lot of times where we're asking directors to bring folks back for collaboration, and we do a lot of that. Strategic planning, team development, and bringing folks back here to the Stassen. And then also, of course, with one thing with COVID is, you've got a lot of the virtual capabilities, so we can do a lot of things to engage employees through virtual type technology. It's changed the way in which revenue works. Approximately 95% of our employees have a telework agreement on file. Their primary work location is in Stassen, but they also can be working from home. We reduced leased office space by about 35%. We used to have 9 regional offices. We now just have 2. The Capitol Complex space we reduced by about 24%, so that's saving about $2.5 million a year. And then production has improved and recruitment has improved. Just that last bullet there, we're averaging 43 applicants per job opening in 24 versus 23 in 2019. That's double. And so that not only strengthens your candidate pool, but ultimately can strengthen your organization in the long run too. Next slide is... we have, as I said, 1,400 total employees. That's 75% of the agency budget. About 280, I think it's 276, which is 20% exactly, are from greater Minnesota. And so these are your constituents that work for the Department of Revenue. And Representative Joy, I'll have you know that Clay County doesn't have anyone yet. So I'm not pulling any favorites. And one of my staff members, I won't say who, said, well, maybe they know who the commissioner is and does not want to work for that person. But at any rate, there is no one from Clay County employed right now, so we'll have to work a little bit more on that. But as you can see in the green there, that better represents Minnesota. And if you've got auditors out in rural Minnesota and areas, they understand the area if they go out and audit. So I think it really strengthens the organization. And this, without kind of the telework that we have, this wouldn't be possible. To actually create jobs out in rural Minnesota. And I remember as a legislator, there used to be bills to like bring the agricultural building and department out to rural Minnesota. You don't have to do that. Now, folks, bring those jobs out there. So we think that's been a real benefit. And the last slide I'll have on this is just, and you can look at this later, but we've noticed that when it comes to the number of our employees or the cost, that when it looks at the number of returns we process, the amount of money that we collect, we are, if you look at the very last column results, we are seeing more production per employee and more efficiency per dollar. At the Department of Revenue, you're getting a better value per dollar than you were in 2019. And we do think the telework and just the whole work has a big part. And we look at this all the time, and this isn't all of our data, I will tell you. Because this is the key right here is the data and the service we're providing to our citizens. And the last one before we get the budget real quickly, agency partners, some of these are under your purview. But one, that last one, which I don't think is under your purview, but all the check printing which you get, is not done by the Department of Revenue, which was news to me. But Employment Economic Development actually does the check printing for like the refunds that went out, advanced child tax credit, that. I don't know for sure why that is, but it's not us. Okay, the budget, last thing we'll cover here. The budget request, the governor's budget request is really a 2% increase in each of the next 2 years, and equates about $4.2 million on a $200 million budget. So it's 2% in 26, and another additional 2% or a total of 4% in the next year. And basically, it's maintaining just kind of all those things we talked about, fraud prevention, maintaining tax return and timing and so forth, but just the overall administration and enforcement and management of the tax system that we have. And then there's one new item, and this is with partnerships right now being more complex, partnerships, they each have a set of owners and to try to kind of figure things out. This would be 13 new, I guess 12 with one supervisor, a new unit that would look at these. And while it would cost initially, over time, it'd bring back about $4 million a year, they think, in increased tax collections. So, members, thank you so much for allowing me to present this and talk about the real excellent work we do here at the Department of Revenue. So, stand for questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner. I think first we have Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Marquardt. I think everybody here knows how much we vastly appreciate you. I have said to folks before that normally when we talk taxes, nobody is excited except unless you talk to Commissioner Marquardt. For some reason, he lights up the room and we all get excited to talk about taxes. A couple comments and a question. First, I just want to say thank you for all the work that you're doing to prevent fraud. We've already seen some real use cases for that. Also, I want to thank you for the modernization around your tech and cybersecurity. That is really critical, and I see Mr. Ho at the table, who also works on the TAC and has a great hand in that, so thank you for that those efforts. And I know that one of the things that you do is spend a lot of time trying to get to an efficient place. And I did want to mention and ask a question, and maybe that's for you, Commissioner, maybe that's for someone else on your team, but there is a bipartisan bill working its way through the legislature right now around the PCR or the political contribution refund program. Typically that is used for individuals anywhere in the state to literally use their own dollars to support causes or folks that they appreciate. And that particular program is run through the Department of Revenue. And I just wanted you to, if you have the ability, to speak a little bit to how that modernization would help the Department of Revenue to more efficiently process those refunds.
So, Commissioner. Mr. Chair, Representative Bonner, I can't get into details. I've talked, but I don't know the details. But I do know that any time we can move from kind of paper. I mean, I remember filling out all those paper, the PCRs or whatever those were. And any time you can move from paper to electronic, it's going to be better. As we've seen here in the Department of Revenue, just people filing electronically where years ago it was a very low percent and now it's normally 94%. So I just will say moving from paper to electronic is much more efficient and time-saving for the department.
Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Marquardt. And, you know, I think the other part of this is you talked a lot about preventing fraud and being able to have good traceability. The bill would essentially say that we'd use the Department of Revenue's software that creates a unique identifier for each transaction so you can track each transaction, where it's coming, where it's going, and all of those things, which would be much more efficient. And, of course, moving away from that paper with everything electronic to try and help you more efficiently process those requests and do it in a timely fashion. So I thank you for all your presentation and thank you for all your work to make state government and particularly our revenues more efficient.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. So it looks like Minnesotans, we do a pretty good job of doing our taxes, probably also helped by the systems you put in place and the fact that you all are watching what folks do pretty well. Is that, would you agree with that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kraft, yes, I would.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. So if, you know, I have real concerns about things happening in Washington and how it is going to impact us here in Minnesota. You know, one thing I'll ask you to comment on is if someone came in from the outside that didn't know your organization and laid off over 6% of your workforce, would it impact your ability to do the job that you did, that you do? And I want to point out that that is what happened in Washington.
Representative Kraft, let's stick to what's happening in Minnesota. And we have a commissioner here. We're not talking about what happened in Washington. We're talking about the presentation of Commissioner Marquardt and what's going on in the state of Minnesota.
And I will bring that, bring it back. That the IRS chief estimated in 2021 that tax cheats cost the U.S. $1 trillion per year. By the way, eliminating poverty in the U.S. would cost $570 million per year. So my question is, would that impact you, and would you be able to provide the level of service that you do today?
Old habits, not Representative Marquardt. Commissioner Marquardt, if you'd like to answer it to the Minnesota aspects of the question.
Mr. Chair and Representative Kraft, there's so the actual funding that we get from the federal government primarily goes to VITA sites. There isn't a lot that actually goes actually to the Department of Revenue. And so, the impact, probably the biggest impact might be, as I mentioned, where folks are looking at data, where there might be, you know, this faith that people aren't looking at data when I turn that. That would be the biggest concern that I would have as far as that would be folks looking at data.
So I will tee the last question up to also give a launching pad for Minute. You had mentioned that more and more people are looking to go to filing stuff with their phone. Can you walk us through the two-factor authentication tokenization of how you would walk ostensibly younger tax filers through the process of filing their simple returns via a mobile device?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, so right now we're phasing that in, and while ultimately the capability would be to file your taxes, that's not right what we're doing right now. But there's quite a elaborate system on how you get to do this. So you've got to file a number of things. We got to get information from you so that we can say that you are who you are, so you can open up an e-file at that point. And so how the mechanics would work, I don't know if Mr. Ho would want to talk about that. I'm not that technologically inclined, but that is something in the future we're hoping to do. But the first thing is kind of the security, making sure you are who you are. So I know there's a number of steps that we've been presented with.
And as the commissioner knows, Assistant Commissioner Ho, myself, Representative Bonner, serve on the TAC. That's going to be, in my opinion, the big thing that is going to need to be in place before we get behind this enthusiastically, is making sure that if somebody wants to utilize a mobile device, that we have lots and lots of impediments to that, so that only the person that needs to be filing that is going to have access to that. And there are an intricate layer of things, but Assistant Commissioner Ho, I know we've talked about this on the, but if you would go through that question, and then we're gonna get to Lead Cleavorn to close, and then we're gonna move on to Minute.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Lee Ho, Deputy Commissioner at the Department of Revenue. Chair Nash and members of the committee, you know, right now there's no method for a individual to file their individual tax return directly with the Department of Revenue. That method would be provided through a third-party vendor currently. TurboTax is a good example of that, and TaxAct. There's a number of different vendors that provide that capability. The Department of Revenue is currently evolving its electronic services capability, and that includes robust identity verification in order to grant someone an account, and also the methods of verifying their access That will lead to greater services being provided to taxpayers, including electronic payments and account information. I think the legislature is exploring the question of, do we provide a direct file method ourselves? And that's something that's currently being debated. But that's the current state of filing directly with the department.
Thank you, Mr. Ho. And to land this, Lead Cleaborn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Commissioner, Deputy Commissioner. I appreciate all of you being here this morning. So I just want to say to Representative Kraft's question, right? When systems become more lax at the federal level, right, it can have a waterfall effect on state collections. And so I would just ask that you keep us apprised as things change in Washington. We don't know what's going to happen there, but with a 6% reduction in workforce, it could actually impact our ability to accurately collect all of the taxes that we maybe should be able to collect on. There are opportunists who then slip into fraud, right? So I think it's an important space for us to keep an eye on as we're looking at projected revenues and things like that as it goes forward. And then Chair Nash, I would just ask of you, please, when our members ask questions on our side of the table, please allow us to get our question out before you anticipate what the question may or may not be, so that we can, you can object to the question after, but please let our members get the question out first. Thank you.
Thank you for being here, Commissioner Marquardt, and to your team. We look forward to having other conversations with you in the near future.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you so much. Appreciate
you. Next, we will have Minute Up. Welcome to the committee. If you would, after you get settled in, introduce yourself for the record, and then we can go through your presentation that I know at least two of us will find more interesting than the rest of us.
I don't understand that statement.
I think you'll find out soon.
Chair Nash, committee members, for the record, my name is Tarek Tomes, and I am the Commissioner of Minnesota IT Services and the Chief Information Officer for the state of Minnesota. And really appreciate the opportunity of doing a overview of the services that Minute provides, as well as then getting into the budget item from the governor's proposed budget. And I'm sure all the committee members are on the edge of their seats as it relates to the technical conversation that is, I'm sure, to ensue here.
I know I am.
As I start, maybe just by way, you know, of a brief introduction, one of the things that we have seen in state government over the 5 years, and we certainly don't see any type of a deceleration, and I think Commissioner Marquardt's testimony just now, and I would actually guess the testimony of pretty much every commissioner in every committee, really points to, in these times, an increasing demand on digital and technical services for government really at all levels. The way Minnesotans interact with government is becoming frequently more digitized and more digitized. Experience that we are able to afford Minnesotans by allowing services to be or ensuring that services are available in a digital way really provides Minnesotans with a flexible way to interact with government on their time and really respecting Minnesotans' time, whether it's being able to renew your driver's license tabs in the middle of the night or at 6 a.m. And we certainly see that continue, and certainly in light of the constrained fiscal situation in Minnesota that we see, I think there will be even increased dependency on technical services as organizations worldwide generally, you know, look to technical and digital means to solve really difficult challenges. So just briefly, our organization, by the numbers, we are really for all intents and purposes, we have kind of two personas, if you will. We are the internal technology organization for the executive branch of state government, and as such, we're very much organized, very similar to other really large organizations that provide a pretty wide breadth of services, similarly organized to like a 3M or an Ecolabs or Cargill, organizations that have diverse operating units, have an IT function that provides services for the diversity of those operating units. And in that role, we support over 41,000 state employees on a ongoing, really 24/7 basis for the services that government provides. Government employees, you know, certainly work around the clock in various capacities. Then as such, of course, we have to be available to support the needs. We support over 70 agencies and boards, major agencies, as well as small boards and commissions. One of the really challenging aspects when I share with peers, and we have a really tight-knit CIO community here in the Twin Cities, we support over 2,700 line of business applications. That's a large portfolio, and that is a immense responsibility that we take an incredible amount of pride in, and we continually work to both rationalize that portfolio. That means making sure that the applications that are in that portfolio are still needed and that they're meeting business needs, and those that are at risk or have technical, what we refer to as technical debt deficiencies that are not meeting needs, that we are strong advocates and partners for transforming those applications. Those applications range everything from the way someone in Minnesota would register an airplane, the way we get into a state park, the way we file our taxes, the way someone connects with healthcare, the way someone may apply with unemployment insurance, so forth and so on. A really complex portfolio. At any point in time, we have about 450 projects or initiatives in our portfolio as the business of government certainly continues to change and the demands continue to shift. And our goal is to really be as agile an organization so that we can meet those changing needs as quickly as possible and as timely as possible. And certainly this legislative session, as all legislative sessions, you know, are an example of that. There will be, you know, hundreds, if not thousands, of changes that have to be made as a result of a legislative session, sometimes new law changes, sometimes modernization or otherwise, and certainly that portfolio, I think, will be incredibly full. Those projects and initiatives measure approximately a little shy of $500 million in initiatives. We resolve a little bit shy of 40,000 incidents per month, meaning someone calls and says something isn't working or someone needs something new. 40,000 incidents a month spread across certainly those 41,000 employees, but also the larger breadth of services that we provide. And we'll get into this a little bit more. Certainly not, you know, least and not the least significant is we resolve and handle over 5,000 security incidents a year, and those range from big and small, and many that, you know, are not discussed publicly. We have a wonderful relationship and opportunity with the Legislative Committee on Cybersecurity to both publicly and privately discuss some of those events and those partnerships, and that partnership certainly with that Legislative Committee, Chair Nash, and your leadership in the cyber realm, and Representative Bonner, your leadership and support in the TAC has really been incredibly important. Next slide, John. From just like the where we are and who we support, we really provide services to every corner of Minnesota, really services in every county, tribal nation, many cities, educational institutions, school districts, higher education opportunities, whether it's network services, security services, consulting services. We really look to provide and share as much as we can. Our scale allows us to have a level of service excellence that really only organizations that get to exercise, you know, 40,000 tickets a month can reach. And then certainly our goal is to give back as much as we can. Sometimes it's just sharing and consulting best practices, and sometimes it's actually providing services to many institutions. Next slide, John. So from an organization perspective, you know, I won't get into this in depth, but, you know, really our vision is to help, support, and continue to evolve the most innovative digital government that works for everyone. And certainly the support from the legislature, and really a big thank you to the legislative body for the last budget session that included funding for what we refer to as the Technology Modernization Fund. That has really allowed us to tackle risky systems, technical debt, and really evolve service spaces with an ability and a capability that did not previously exist. That investment has really been incredibly beneficial to state government and certainly constituents, whether it's providing more efficient ways to provide birth and death records or allowing Minnesotans to register airplanes online via self-service capability. And the list really goes on and on, using information and data to find the best place to idle an emergency response vehicle in outstate with the goal of saving a life. That vehicle has been really, really profound, and just a huge thank you to this body and to the legislature for funding that technology modernization vehicle. One of the more profound and important partnerships that exists for us, and I'm sure across the country it would be the envy of any of our peers, is what started off as the Blue Ribbon Council on Information Technology, and it has since changed into the Technology Advisory Committee. Chair Nash and Representative Bonner are participants in that. Includes private sector members, includes members from outstate Minnesota, and includes leadership from throughout the counties that really provide advice, not just on how to provide technology services, but actually how government should use technology services. And I think the recommendations, and I think they're available to you, that have come about from that body that is chaired by a couple of really wonderful private sector people with incredible expertise, has provided really rich set of recommendations that we try to live on a daily basis. Our transformation from a project mindset to a product mindset, our transformation to really work in more agile ways, the way we provide and approach our security work, really that body has leaned into every avenue and provided really rich feedback from a lot of experience, and really could not be more thankful for the work and the contributions that that body provides really to state government. From a funding perspective, as it relates to how we are organized, Minute receives really nominal, very little general funding, if you will. The vast majority of information technology related expenditures from within the state really come in broadly two forms, and maybe three forms, if you will. So really small general funding, but then we provide a set of services that are consumed unilaterally, you know, really by the entirety of the executive branch, and then we provide those services beyond the executive branch. Those are things like the way we communicate, communication and collaboration tools, network services, the way you authenticate and log in and verify your identity, service desk type services, certainly network services. So, you know, the way we manage hardware, that comprises a little less than 30% of the IT expenditures within the executive branch. And then 66% of the expenditure, roughly or so, as it relates to IT costs, are really related to that portfolio of 2,700 applications and those projects and initiatives that traverse providing services for the executive branch. That is really the predominant amount of IT spending in that space. From a security perspective, I mentioned, you know, the little bit over 5,000 incidents that we handle per year. And, you know, as I mentioned, those range from big to small. Certainly we are heavy partners with CISA at a federal level, also with the BCA at a local level, and we get engaged when there are cyber events, even when they're not within the executive branch, whether it's providing consulting services or making really vital connections. We are part of what is referred to as the multi-state ISAC, so an information sharing organization. And that role that we play there, you know, is really one that we take an incredible amount of pride in providing. The folks that work at Minute are just unbelievably, incredibly dedicated public servants that really do everything that they possibly can to make sure that the information of Minnesotans is safe and secure, that we are protecting services and making sure that those services are available, and that we're making sure that we share broadly how to protect public sector services, really, whether it's in a small township, a county, a tribal nation, a larger city. Really want to also here thank this committee and the legislature for the investments that were made in cybersecurity. They really allowed for a couple of really, really, you know, important things. One, they allowed us to add additional layers of defenses to the services that we provide, which is, you know, absolutely essential. Fighting cybersecurity crime or making sure that we're protecting services, you know, probably a really bad analogy is a little bit like buying groceries. You don't get to buy groceries one time and then eat, you know, forever. It is a continual investment, and the investment really needs to be on healthy groceries. It needs to be on the right things, because the bad actors, as, you know, probably we have no better expertise in the room than Chair Nash in this space, they are investing in the most sophisticated of capabilities to try to, you know, climb those cyber walls. And so our ability to continue to do that is absolutely essential. And then the other two things that are really important, one, the funding for the whole of state cyber program, which provides really rudimentary cyber defenses throughout Minnesota to organizations relatively small. In outstate Minnesota, lots of school districts, education opportunities, cities, townships that really couldn't afford some of these rudimentary layers of defense that, you know, we all feel that is like the you know, absolute floor of what is necessary to protect. And having the funding that was made available by the federal infrastructure plan, supported by the legislature to provide those matching funds for that program, has really allowed the state of Minnesota to heavily subsidize and provide those services throughout Minnesota, and the uptake and consumption of those services has been fabulous. And then last, you know, is really the investment, for example, in how Minnesotans will interact with state services, and how Minnesotans may authenticate and verify who they are with state services, a service that we refer to as login.mn.gov, which to the last question, includes really robust identity verification type services in technical terms, IL 1, 2, and 3, that really is similar to the types of services that you would see at an airport that verify someone's identity in various stages depending on the type of services that's provided. And it's really a core fundamental part of the types of things that government should provide. If you're authenticating with a government service, that requires a high level of trust that you have these identity verification capabilities to make sure that if I, you know, in my personal life sign up for a service, that I can verify that I am actually who I say that I am. Next slide. Minnesota's cloud journey. This is, you know, probably the part committee members where there's two people acutely interested in this. But really, this is the way, you know, we manage services and make sure that we provide the resiliency, recovery, as well as the cost effectiveness for how infrastructure and other services are provided. The investment that was made in cloud transformation has really been incredibly effective. A 105% increase in servers running in the cloud, which means that we don't have to buy servers on premise, that we don't invest that we don't have to invest in continually refreshing capacity. That in government, of course, government demand is cyclical. It isn't always, you know, like build it for the biggest occupancy. You know, taxation occurs during one time of the year. Other services kind of ebb and flow, and cloud constructs allow us to burst capacity when necessary, and that investment has really allowed us to move critical infrastructure to places that are safer, more secure, provide the capacity that we need when we need it in a really incredibly robust way.
Commissioner, I'll pause you there for a second to talk about sort of the progressional history of where we were and where we are now. Mr. Eichten and I go way back to my freshman year. There was at one time, I think we had 77 independent data centers, one of which was actually a server found behind a drywall closet.
And we have gotten down to, what are we now at, six or less?
Six.
That's impressive. And the amount of data under management has not gone down. But what we've done, in part to a bill that I passed, and I think Representative Bonner, you were on that bill a couple years ago, the Cloud First bill. So cloud is still mysterious for many people because you can't put your arms around it. And there are still people who worship at the altar of the blinky light. And the importance of cloud is that it fails over instantaneously. It's scalable. It is more cost effective and has no CapEx that we have to go through. So owning data centers is a really horrible model when you understand that people who have built data centers for this very purpose were effectively renting somebody else's computer. And it is incumbent upon them to manage all of the software components, the networking components, and all of that. So, but to that, Commissioner, if you could, and we're running close to our limit, I had in the Cloud First bill, there was an expectation for there to be a great amount of competition between the primary cloud vendors. Can you tell the committee from a percent, because I know there was a report that we passed last year with the help of Representative Cleavorn putting it in her bill, that there was a report required to let us know what percentage of the programs that you have are under which cloud vendor, not specifically and not with great detail, but that we're indeed allowing the market to help us find the most cost-effective solution. And then wanted to also commend in his absence the work of Mr. Israel. He is really, really solid, and Chair's commentary. The fight against cybersecurity or in cybersecurity is a never-ending war. So you'll see me probably cut a few things in the budget out of necessity, but I am going to work very, very hard to make sure that the appropriate tools are there because we'll just call them what they are, the enemies to what we're doing. They have more cash. They have more capability. They have and find the most capable cyber warriors because they will go to a school and they'll recruit the smartest people who have the most amount of, as I call it in presentations, moral flexibility to become criminals. And they're fighting us in an asymmetrical war. But if you could go to the cloud, and then we're going to ask you to conclude because rules is sort of streaming in, and I wanted to leave a little bit of time for some member questions.
Chair Nash, committee members, thank you for that question, and certainly thank you for your leadership as it relates to the Cloud First bill and the foresight, you know, many, many years ago as it relates to that really important pivot for state government. So really thank you for your leadership and foresight with that. We are what, from a strategic perspective, we are what one would refer to as a multi-cloud state. And as such, we really embrace a multitude of cloud providers, and we really want to make sure that we use the best capability to solve the problem at hand in the best way possible. Without getting into, you know, specific vendors, Chair Nash and committee members, we have not a, you know, 50-50 split, but pretty close to a 50-50, you know, as it relates to where and how we manage infrastructure from a cloud perspective. But in addition to infrastructure, we provide many services from that 2,700 application portfolio in a cloud construct. And as such, you know, we provide or support services in many, many different cloud areas, and we can provide the specific. I think the report outlines the specific, but we really embrace that marketplace competition from an intentional perspective. You know, certainly the things that we have to manage more intentionally and closely, you know, we have to build up expertise for how to do that in these different cloud environments. So we definitely have an intentionality behind it, but we don't preclude cloud environments that have solutions and meet the needs of agency-based services because of, you know, any one direction or another. Like our solicitation processes really are open to that vendor space marketplace.
Okay, we have some questions, and we're going to try to be brief because we also need to turn the room for rules.
We're going to go Representative Sexton, then Representative Bonner, and Representative Cleavorn to close. Representative Sexton.
Yes, sir. Question on the rollout for basically paid family medical leave. How involved are you in the creation, rollout, and can you get into the testing and your results on the testing?
Commissioner.
Chair Nash, Representative and committee members, thank you for that question. We're very involved in it, as it is the case in most of these really large efforts. We partner heavy with private sector organizations, certainly to do the lifting. We don't build or even aspire to build and create everything on our own. There are really three broad aspects to that particular initiative. So one is the kind of the business-facing side, the ability to pull in the revenue associated with paid family medical leave. There's a component that is the resident-facing side of it, how someone makes an application for benefits, how they solicit an ability to go on paid family medical leave. And then there's the internal part. How does the workforce actually manage the workflow associated with that? And all of that work is proceeding quite well. The business-facing side of it leverages heavily the current unemployment insurance system, so we didn't create or build something new. We reuse capability that already exists, that already works incredibly well, and then the work and development on those other two is kind of mid-flight right now.
And Representative Sexton, you good? Or okay, thank you. So we have Representative Bonner and then Representative Cleavorn. We have 8 minutes, so we will do our thing in 8 minutes because we have rules coming next. And
yes.
We'll go from there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the interest of time, while I have a zillion fun questions, I will try to narrow it down. I do want folks in this room and those listening to understand that Minnesota, when I go to places across the country, is literally the envy, right? We have the systems of the Technical Advisory Council. We have a cybersecurity commission. We have things in place that actually help us to be successful. But most importantly, the reason that matters is because we're able to meet people where they are, right? Make government that actually works for people. And that's the direction that Minnesota is moving. And that is not uncommon. Government is not typically known for being this sort of great individuals for meeting people. And they tend to be cumbersome and difficult. But we're actually flipping the coin on that. So thank you for that. I don't want to get in too much on the cybersecurity, but I just want to thank you for all your efforts. What other folks in this room don't know is we're only as strong as our weakest link. We just put in place a program, and thank you to Minnit for extending their expertise to sort of help universities and schools to be able to handle cyber incidents within their realm. That's huge, and it leads into that whole of state for cybersecurity that you mentioned. That is incredible. Like, that does not happen in other states. So I want to commend you for that, and appreciate the cybersecurity. But I do have, and for those who don't get it, to get a better perspective, it's a little that cybersecurity and all the things that we're doing between the cloud and the cybersecurity incident reporting and all of those things, it's a little like wrapping us all in a warm blanket from a security perspective. So thank you for that. My questions are two, and I've kind of limited that. But in that regard of trying to work, there's one accomplishment that you have, and I'll just give you both questions at once so you can get to them quickly. The first is you received an A grade for digital technology from the Center for Digital Government, and we've done that 2 years in a row. And for the people who are the non-nerds in the room, I would love if you could briefly speak to sort of what does it mean to get an A grade, and what kind of things do you have to do, or what kind of properties you have to demonstrate to get an A. So I would love to hear more about that. And two, and this is a straight up question, is in terms of barriers or opportunities that you see for the department, how can the legislature help you accomplish that mission? Those are my questions.
Commissioner, or should we make Mr. Eichten work for a living today and have him answer something? Commissioner.
I certainly don't mind Deputy Commissioner Eichten leaning in to these answers, and maybe the answer to the Digital States, you know, survey is a really good one. So I'm going to just pass that one to you just for in a second here, if I could. There are only 5 states in the country that have received an A grade from the Center for Digital Government. And the A grade that we received, not this time, but the first time, which is, I think, 4 years ago now, was the first time Minnesota has ever received that grade. And it's a really robust thing. So it is not about managing blinking lights or looking at blinking lights. It's actually, you know, what you're doing and where does leadership, you know, reside, and what do you do with data and cybersecurity and digital services. And I mean, it is a really, really robust, comprehensive thing. And I will say, from, you know, the Minnesota perspective, it really takes and took, and the reason I think it happened, because of the wonderful partnership with the legislature, with the Technology Advisory Committee, with the Blue Ribbon Council on Technology, with legislators that really have a strong background in technology that share. Like, it really was such a collaborative effort, because no one technology organization could actually pull that off and can actually do that. It takes such a robust round, because it's not just how technology services are provided, but it's actually how does a state use them? Like, what services are they providing to citizens? So if I could pass it over to Deputy Eichten for a thought.
Deputy Commissioner Eichten.
Mr. Chair, I've been taught before, if it's been said perfectly, don't say more and ruin it. So I think I would leave it at that. I would just say, other than to say, it truly is that comprehensive approach to IT, not as just the delivery of services, but leveraging technology to better serve the people of the state. That is ultimately what they're looking for, and the alignment between the legislative branch and the executive branch in that regard is kind of the key element to a high grade.
Okay. We're going to go to Lead Cleavorn as we have 2 minutes left. Yeah. Lead Cleavorn.
And I'll be very quick. One, I just want to say thank you so much for the great work that you've done, and I would really like to thank you for taking those investments that we made in the state government bill last year and using them for the good of all Minnesotans and for our agencies, for our people, for our businesses. So thank you for that. I would ask the question very quickly. These are the same types of investments that are needed in our constitutional offices as well. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So the reason I'm asking that question is because I would invite all of the members of this State Gov Committee and you, Chair Nash, that we can lead the way in making these IT investments for our constitutional officers, as well as making sure that we keep minutes systems up to date. And I know last year the bill passed on a partisan basis, and I would ask for the members of this committee to hear how important these investments are. They serve our people, they serve our businesses, they serve our state, and so I would ask for your cooperation in getting that passed for our constitutional officers as well as Minute. Thank you very much.
Lead Cleavorn, well, I did talk to the commissioner as we walked past each other in the tunnel the other day with some ideas. Like to get on each other's calendars to talk further about those ideas, but I will say, as we close, we've come a very long way since I got here as a freshman. We've come a very long way since, actually, you and I were both invited to apply for the job that you now have. I will commend you for moving forward in a very positive manner. Minute used to be a curse word, and now we're doing really well. So, members, we will be back on Thursday. And with that, we are adjourned. Before we do so, would you please pick up some of your papers and stuff and help the staff, because we have rules coming up here shortly. With that, we are adjourned.
Thank you.